Hello, I'm Anne LaCase. I'm an associate professor of medicine at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, and I'm a lymphoma specialist. I'd like to welcome you to the Medscape Oncology Insights coming to you from the 2017 American Society of Hematology Annual Meeting. And today we'll be discussing some of the highlights of the lymphoma and CAR T-cell sessions at the meeting. Joining me today is Karen Jacobson, who's a friend and colleague. She's also a lymphoma specialist at Dana-Farber and is really a leader in the field of CAR T-cell studies. Welcome, Karen.
Hi, Anne. Thanks.
So maybe we'll start with CAR T-cells, and if you could describe for us sort of what you thought of the different presentations, how the different products sort of compare in terms of efficacy.
Yeah, so I think we're really talking about the anti-CD19 directed CAR T cells and really the three products that are furthest along in development. So the product from Novartis, the product from Kite, and the product from Juno. And what I think is pretty remarkable is that across all three products, even though they differ in terms of the co-stimulatory domain and the kinetics of the CAR T cell expansion, we are really seeing similar efficacy across all three studies. And you know, these aren't tremendous numbers of patients, and it's really hard to compare from one study to another. I think it's dangerous to do that.
Right.
But I do think the numbers are similar enough that, you know, we can be excited about all three studies.
Right. And in terms of the toxicity, is there really any significant difference between the different studies?
Yeah, you know, again, I think it's I think it is difficult to compare, you know, one study to another. They're not randomized. They're not necessarily the same patient populations.
Right.
However, I do think it looks very interesting, the really low rates of grade 3 and 4 cytokine release syndrome, actually the low rates in general seen with the Juno product. And also the lower rates of grade 3 and 4 neurotoxicity seen, although those numbers are closer to what we're seeing on the other studies. So I think that's interesting.
And do you have any sense as to why that might be the fact? Is it the co-stimulatory molecules different and that's... or?
Yeah, so I think there are two things that may be different. So one is that the Juno study allows for bridging therapy from between the time of apheresis and the time of CAR T-cell infusion. And so we know that tumor cell burden does correlate with toxicity. And so if patients get some effective bridging therapy, which may not be, we don't think it's going to be long-term effective. We don't think it's skewing their efficacy data, but where it may actually debulk them temporarily before they get their CAR T-cells back, that's one aspect.
Right.
But we do know that kinetics of the 4-1BB co-stimulatory domain differ from the kinetics of the CD28 domain, and we don't know yet what effect that has on efficacy, but that certainly may have an effect on toxicity.
And with regard to the neurologic toxicity, which is really the thing we worry about the most, are there any new insights as to why that happens? How can we predict for it?
Yeah.
How do we manage it?
Yeah, so there were the Juno group did present some of the pretreatment patient characteristics and biomarker analyses, and it does look like patients with higher tumor burden, higher pretreatment LDH, and also higher inflammatory cytokines before treatment are at increased risk of neurotoxicity, and I mean those are similar things that have been seen across the studies.
Right.
I think that something that wasn't presented at this meeting was some data that came out from the Hutch recently that looked at what's going on in the blood vessels that permeate the brain, and that there does seem to be some element of endothelial injury, and that actually probably increases the blood-brain barrier permeability, and there are cells and inflammatory cytokines that traffic in that setting. So I think we have a lot to learn about neurotoxicity, and there's a lot of room for improvement. But I think it's all worthwhile because this is such a remarkable therapy.
And how do you see this kind of rolling out now that we have the first commercially available product? You know, how is that going to change how we're managing patients?
Well, I mean, I think it creates a standard of care for patients where there wasn't one before. I mean, these are patients who either relapsed after auto transplant or couldn't or were not eligible for auto transplant because they had chemo-insensitive disease. And so these were patients that you put on targeted agents, with a 20 to 30% chance of having a response, or you put them on clinical trials. But now we do have a standard of care option. So I think that's practice changing.
Yeah.
And the next wave of studies are going to be the randomized studies that take patients who are at high risk for not responding to salvage chemotherapy or doing well with an auto transplant, right. and randomizing them at the point of relapse after their first line chemotherapy to either CAR or salvage and an auto transplant. So that may move this therapy earlier.
Which may be associated with less toxicity. No, it's really incredibly exciting.
Yeah.
So sort of switching gears to the plenary session where Echelon 1, the brentuximab plus ABD versus ABVD study was presented in advanced stage upfront Hodgkin lymphoma. You know, what are your thoughts on this study? And I think that the big question everyone wants to know is this going to change practice in the U.S., globally? What do you think of this study?
So I think I was really eagerly awaiting these results because the early phase study, the single arm study actually looked so promising with, such a high 3-year PFS rate for a group of patients that, if you looked at historical controls, did much worse. I think, there is a PFS benefit there. There is but there's no overall survival benefit. And there is increased toxicity with this regimen. And so it's hard. I think it's going to be variably practice changing across the globe.
I mean, it is a positive study with regard to how it was designed, but whether or not that's going to translate, be interesting to see. And the toxicity, how do you think about that? And do you worry about this being more broadly applied and people getting into trouble with neutropenia? Other infections or other toxicities associated with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, we all know how to deal with the neutropenia we see after ABVD chemotherapy, and this is going to be a different ball of wax. And I think also the neuropathy that we see is actually much less reversible than what we see with the vinca alkaloids. And so patients, I have patients that I treated in the study that have, debilitating neuropathy, years after finishing therapy.
Yeah. So we're going to need much longer term follow up, I think.
Yeah.
And then I think the third abstract I'd love to hear your thoughts on is and it's already led to a drug approval, is the acalabrutinib data. And what did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it looks like it has, again, it's hard to compare that to historical control seen with ibrutinib, but it does look like maybe the complete response rate is potentially a little bit higher than seen with ibrutinib. And I think the most intriguing thing is that it has a potentially more favorable side effect profile. It doesn't look like it's a completely clean drug because I think that, as we treat more patients and treat them for longer, we are seeing some atrial fibrillation and some of the off-target effects that we saw with ibrutinib, but it's certainly to a much lower extent, and so it may be a safer drug to give to patients with a cardiac history or with a prior history of atrial fibrillation. So I do think you're going to see it widely adopted in clinical practice.
Yeah. So what do you think is the next step with that drug?
Well, I mean, I think that we need to, potentially look at combining it with therapies and maybe even moving it up earlier into the disease treatment. I think the other thing is just longer term follow up so we can confirm the safety profile.
Yeah, great. So, Karen, thank you so much. This has been great. Fascinating discussion, like we have all the time back at home. So,
well, thanks for asking thoughtful questions.
And thank you for joining us. This is Anne Lacaze from ASH 2017 in Atlanta.